Good morning, everyone. I'd like to walk you through today a bit of our adventures we've had the last few years in trying to estimate cattle methane emissions using eddy covariance measurements. This was part of a larger project funded by CSIRO in Australia, trying to look at different methodologies to estimate methane emissions from cattle, particularly from grazing systems. Now, methane from cattle is still a very topical issue. This is a selection of headlines from just the last few weeks. Now, in a large beef-producing country like Australia, emissions from cattle are still the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture. Now, we also know that animals on grazing systems have higher emissions profiles than animals in more intensive feeding operations. Now, this is a concern to Australia, where roughly 70% of Australia's cattle are finished on pasture, grass-fed. Now, Australia has a lot of cattle, about 28 million head, and over half of those are found in the northern rangelands, and that's where our study took place, just west of Townsville in Queensland. Now, this is a tropical system, tropical pastures. We have a wet season and a dry season, and lots of variation between that. Abundant pasture in the wet season and deteriorating during the dry season. Now, these are extensive systems, typically low cattle density, and it makes it a challenge for measurement techniques. So the idea was, could eddy covariance be used to estimate emissions from these animals? Now, this is a typical eddy covariance setup. So on your left, you can see the open path methane analyzer, a smaller CO2 H2O analyzer on the right, and the sonic anemometer in the middle. Now, eddy covariance is very capable of long-term monitoring fluxes at a landscape scale. And but the something we have to remember is that that flux is going to represent an area on the surface, so the flux footprint. So the flux footprint is the area of the surface that contributes to that measured flux. We know that areas closer to the tower will contribute more to that flux than areas farther away. And typically, if an eddy covariance tower is set up on an extensive homogeneous landscape, no matter what happens where that footprint is, that flux is always representing the surface underneath it. But of course, when we put animals in there, it becomes very important to know the interaction between that footprint and the animals. So how many animals are within that area of influence, and where are they within that footprint, and how long are they spending there? So there's lots of challenges associated with trying to do this. And another thing we have to remember is that animals move around quite a bit. And eddy covariance calculations are done over an averaging period, typically half an hour. In our case, we've tried to shrink that down to 15 minutes to better resolve these animal locations. But even just walking through 15 minutes, so this is time-lapse images, just a series of time-lapse images. We have an image every 3 minutes. So here you have just looking upwind from our tower, and no animals there. 3 minutes later, we have some animals coming through. 3 minutes later, they're gone, another couple. So very, very transient, and it makes it a real challenge. Nevertheless, we've had to persist. So what we ended up doing was we're monitoring 20 Brahman steers. These animals were grazing a set of 15-hectare grazing paddocks. So we had two EC towers, one set up in a pasture site where they were grazing, another a downwind of a water point site, where the animals would typically come and congregate for several hours each day. Now, this was the only water available, so they had to come back here and there was a small enclosure and walkover weighers, and they typically would gather around there, so it made it convenient point to try to capture them. Now, if we look at some of the flux measurements from these sites, well, you know, similar to those pictures, when we tried to look at the fluxes from this pasture site, essentially we just have a flat line. There's not much happening on the pasture as far as methane flux, and we just have a tiny transient fluxes. So we measured for a four-month period from June to September. Now, around about August, these animals had to be supplemented. So the supplement point we were able to put upwind of our measurement tower, and that was successful in drawing animals into that footprint for a longer period of time. So we can see after August we have a stronger flux signal showing the animals. Of course, the best site was our water point site, where we had much stronger flux signals just due to the animals congregating there for a longer period of time. Now, if we average all our fluxes by hour, we get a sort of a typical day, so it's the hour of the day on the x-axis and our fluxes on the y-axis. Now we've separated this into two-month periods, so we have the June and July period and the August and September period. So the solid lines there, the big peaks are indicative of the cattle behavior, which was very consistent over those 4 months. So we can see that cattle entered that water point between 8 and 9 in the morning, and so we have these rapid elevation in fluxes, and that continues until about 3 or 4 in the afternoon. The cattle leave the water point and head back to the pasture. Now, the dashed lines, we can see that in the pasture there was essentially nothing obviously happening in that June-July period, but in the August to September period, once that supplement point was in place, we see a slight peak as animals congregated around the supplement in the early morning before going to water, and then a little bit in the afternoon when they return to the pasture for grazing. Now, our idea, of course, is to capture, we want to calculate emissions, and in order to do that, we have to use these periods when we have fluxes that are contained, these animal emissions. So just in this top row here, this is the fraction of the measurement periods that have elevated fluxes. And of course, in the pasture, only 4% of those fluxes that we were looking at actually had any sort of elevated emissions, which would indicate animals being present. As we had the supplement, that increased to 20%, and of course, the best place to try to capture some emissions was at the water point, where over 50% of our fluxes contained elevated fluxes due to the presence of animals and a much stronger flux signal. Now, in order to take these fluxes and calculate animal emissions, we need to use a model to interpret these fluxes. And back in 1996, Tom Flesch had a paper that talked about the fact that the footprint for flux measurements could be determined by the use of this Lagrangian stochastic model, and that's what we've done here. Now, basically, a model simulation is done by putting the locations of our sources or our animals, and then there's a virtual release of particles based on the meteorological parameters of the measurement period. And those particles are followed downwind, and those trajectories that interact with our measurement point here are accumulated. And this provides us with the tool to be able to interpret those fluxes and to determine, you know, how much these sources are influencing that measured flux. Now, we need to map out those source locations of the animals. And to do that, we've done this with time-lapse images. So this is the water point. We had a separate camera tower that we have a mark here. That's where our actual measurement tower was. So winds, typical winds, would be flowing this way. So in order to turn these time-lapse images into locations, we had a sort of a semi-automated procedure, which basically involved taking the image. We'd have to manually load that image and basically click on each cow. And essentially what happens is that would automatically record our pixel locations, which was over here. And then we do a polynomial transformation based on known coordinates of targets within the image. And that provided us with our coordinates for the animals. And once we've ran that through the model, what we found was we had quite a bit of variation in our pasture measurements. So again, this is the available data that we have averaged by hour, so you can kind of look at a typical day. Now and this is our emission on the y-axis in grams of methane per head, essentially per day. We actually had a lot of variability in the pasture site, and of course there's not many measurements in this daytime period because we had very few periods when there was animals that we could measure in the pasture, as they're usually at the water point site. Now, adding the water point data, we get a more reasonable emissions ranging from about 100 to 200 grams of methane today per day. And if we combine those results, we get something like that, showing higher emissions in the morning based on these higher emissions at the pasture, but then leveling out to what we would kind of expect from animals on pasture. So there's still some uncertainty in regards to these early morning measurements and why they're so high, but there's still some work to be done. But essentially, you know, there's definitely some limitations regarding this. We have the small dynamic footprint relative to these vast paddocks. Our use of time-lapse images, of course, reduce us to just daylight hours. And of course, this animal movement makes interpretation very difficult. So it was much easier to resolve when those animals were gathered resting at the water point. And of course, like I say, there's still some high uncertainty associated with those early morning hours. This is a calm time, not much turbulence happening, and there's more uncertainty and so associated with those measurements. And of course, there's uncertainty according with that rapid animal movement across the footprint, which we tend to see in the pasture situation. Nevertheless, you know, eddycovariance is very capable of long-term monitoring in some of these harsh environments. There are some things that could be done. Animal tracking technologies could provide further opportunities to look at this a little bit in a little bit better detail. We could use a little bit better use of fencing and exclusion zones. If we could actually gather these animals in a smaller area, then it could be possible to use a more of a source area approach, so we wouldn't need to know the exact animal location. And that would only require an animal number within a confined area. And there's still some more work needed to better understand the model sensitivity, especially as that relates to distant sources. Anyway, thank you very much. Any questions? I'll try to do my best to answer.
Did you have any efforts to figure out manure? You had a path where here the animals went through right and early. Did you do any kind of modeling to evaluate what losses would be associated with a fox around the fields and relative density?
I think when animals were within range, I mean, those animal missions dominated the situation. We have many periods when there was no animals in the footprint, but we couldn't really detect so much of a signal.
That's good.
We observe similar high methane emissions from grazing cattle early in the morning, and our cattle were GPS located, so they had a regular, I call it their midnight snack, but they usually graze several hours either side of midnight. So they may graze 2 to 4 or 5 hours during the night.
Right.
This is in winter. So maybe it was because you only had the daylight imagery.
That's right.
That you weren't able to document that other activity period that would have contributed to that.
Yeah, and we've seen that in other situations where we're using open path techniques. We've seen those elevated fluxes in the morning hours. But yeah, you're right. That could just could be expected. Yeah. Yeah, and it's difficult on these extensive paddocks to try to figure out where they are, what they're doing it in the evening, and it's more of a challenge too with the low turbulence to really capture that.
We can continue the discussion after the session also, but thank you very much.